is full of deceit. It burns up, dies, and a dark shadow falls over his soul. From the ashes of a once great man has risen a curse, a wrong that must be righted. He looked to the skies for a vindicator, someone to strike fear into the black hearts of the same man who created him. The battle between good and evil has begun. Against an army of shadows is a dark warrior. The purveyor of good is the voice of silence and the mission of justice. This is
ladies and gentlemen, we are talking basically about the career and the legacy of one of the greatest of all time, my second favorite professional wrestler of all time, the icon, the man, the myth, the legend, Sting. I want to thank everyone for tuning in this week to an episode of Conversation with Shelby Green, and we are also going to review AEW Revolution, and I will let you know this right here, right now. It's probably the best AEW pay-per-view I've ever seen, and it's probably the best show that Tony Khan has done with his booking. And if anybody that's following me knows that I've been very critical of Tony Khan, I've been very critical of AEW, but Sunday night on March 3rd, Tony Khan delivered a great pay-per-view that I think every wrestling fan in the world would be proud of. There were some things that I didn't like. I will get that out there, and I'm going to talk about the review of the show as we start right now with that, and then I'm going to get into my tribute to Sting. And I know that we had some passings in the world of professional wrestling this past week. Obviously, the bodyguard, the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, Virgil, he passed away. And also, Ole Anderson, a controversial figure in professional wrestling history, a great mind that kind of lost his way with the business, but also didn't give a shit personally. If you knew who Ole was, it was that. But I was going to talk about them, but I thought, you know what? I don't really have my notes and platform to do my research. I know more about Ole than Virgil, obviously, but I would say this. I'm going to maybe next week on the show I'll bring that up because we got a lot of things to talk about because WrestleMania is around the corner and we got some good things to talk about. But this is a show that I am really excited to talk about. I'm going to watch my language on this. I'm going to try and be as professional as I can. I will drop some bombs, F-bombs, B-words, shithead, you know, whatever. But at the same time, I'm going to try to really to keep my language down because I think I don't really need to cuss or yell or scream on this episode, and that's what we're going to do. So let's get into it. So I will let you know how my birthday weekend. By the way, I am officially, as of Monday this past week, I am 31 years of age. So happy birthday to me. Yeah, whatever. Clap for myself, I guess. But I will let you guys know this straight up that I'm actually very, very ecstatic to get this episode out to you guys. I mean, it's going to be a really good episode with a lot of good things to talk about. And AEW Revolution was built as Sting's last match. It happened Sunday, March 3rd in Greensboro Coliseum in Greensboro, North Carolina. If anybody knows professional wrestling, knows Greensboro Coliseum is one of the top 3 to 5 to 10 of the biggest wrestling venues you can perform in for history. Sting's first big break in wrestling. We're going to talk about that at the end of this. But we're going to get right into it. I did watch the 0 Hour show. And I want to start off with this. And a lot of people that talk about professional wrestling and they talk about things. I will state this: I understand that 0 Hour is a way to get the crowd into it, to get the crowd give the viewers a home. Here's what I would do: 0 hour is what I, this is what I would do for 0 hour. I would do 0 hour, basically, I'll put it on, I would do an hour pre-show before television, before the pay-per-view event, the event or whatever it is, and I would literally, and this is just my idea, I would literally do just, you got on this card, if you take away the pre-show matches, you got 1, 2, 3, 4, you got 9 matches on the card, and it was a good booking of the show. Why not just do a preview for an hour or an hour and a half on television and just give us a preview for the pay-per-view? That's all. That's what I would do. That's personally what I would do. But I'm not a guy who runs a wrestling company. I'm just a fan. So the pre-show matches, I'm not going to talk about. 0 hour matches, I'm not going to talk about. But I will get right into this. I will say this. Production-wise, I thought AEW did a really good job with their camera work. I thought it was good. And I thought it was I thought they did a really good job with that. I will say this. The first match of the night, singles match for the AEW TNT Championship. Christian Cage with Killswitch, Mother Wayne, the Prodigy, Nick Wayne against Daniel Garcia. Now, I will state this. Here's what, and I didn't make my notes about this. I had some people over at the house that were watching it with me, so I didn't really do that. But WrestleMania, I'm getting back on my grind. I'm making my notes and getting back into the back in full swing. That being said, getting into the match, Daniel Garcia comes out to a big ovation. The guy has really worked his ass off. He's getting over as a babyface. People are getting behind Garcia. Christian Cage comes out. He gets some cheers, but he's really booed out of the building. I thought they did a great job working. I thought Garcia, as small as he is, I thought in my head, man, he's really grown on me. He is a small guy, and he works extremely hard. His work in the ring's really good. I thought Christian Cage and him did a good job. And this is why it's important to have veterans on your show, because Garcia is very young, and Christian Cage is 50 years old, but Christian Cage was able to slow things down with him. They were the first 3 to 5 minutes of the match, they were rest holes. They were just locking in. And they did a good job. I thought this was a really good opener. I thought they did a great job. The crowd was into it. Several false finishes. Garcia's partner from, guy runs in to stop. I thought Christian Cage did a dive on the outside floor. I thought Garcia, the pile driver spot on Christian Cage from the near fall, thought was good. I thought they teased him. I thought Killswitch's choke slam to Garcia was pretty damn good for a false finish. I thought Mother Wayne getting involved was kind of annoying. Prodigy Nick Wayne is just there to take bumps and get his ass kicked, but he's doing his thing. And Christian Cage ends up getting a win with a 1-2-3 and in a dirty finish that I thought was the right move. I know people online were like, well, they should have gave it to Garcia, the crowd. But here's the thing, guys. The TNT title has been passed around. Christian Cage has really made that title something special. He's done a really good job with that. So at the same time, and I know that we are going to get when Killswitch, Luchasaurus, whatever you want to call it, when he finally is fed up with Christian Cage's bullshit, and he puts that hand around Christian Cage's throat and he chokeslams his ass, it's going to be massive. It's going to be a hell of a pop. And they're going to do something with that. But at the same time, you got to let the story play out. Christian Cage hanging on to that title, working and working and working, means more right now. And Garcia will have his moment. He'll get a belt eventually. Daniel Garcia is the type of guy that is going to be he's a good worker in the ring for this new age. Technically sounded. He doesn't make a lot of mistakes. But he does do a lot of things really smooth, and he is a little raw. He needs some seasoning, but he is very talented in the ring. Not a good promo cutter. He does have personality. The little dance thing he does, I think he's got behind that. I think he does a good job with that. But same time, he's growing on me. He's growing on me. I'm not one of those guys that wants to see. Daniel Garcia get a world title run. No. That's not nothing I want to see. Do I want to see him get a TNT title run? Do I see him get an international championship run? Do I want to see him get a tag title run? Yeah, of course. He's never going to be the guy, but I think he's talented enough to make himself, like, you can put him in a situation, like put him on television, give him a world title match. It ain't going to hurt depending on who it is. I know it might not draw, might not, but it is what it is. The second match of the night. In this match, to me, two veterans going at it for the Continental Crown Championship, which is the AEW Continental Championship, the Ring of Honor World Title, and the New Japan Strong Openweight Championship. Eddie Kingston versus Bryan Danielson. And the stipulation was Eddie's titles were on the line. And Bryan Danielson lost, he had to shake Kingston's hand. And I will say this, Bryan Danielson's been around a long time, and Eddie Kingston's always been one of my favorites. I thought they did a hell of a job. Bryan being the masterful submission expert, working joints on Eddie. Eddie firing back with some counters. The suplex counters back and forth I thought were really good. They told a good story on that. The slap boxing thing, I was kind of over that at that point. I get you're just going to start slapping each other for no reason. I am more a fan of guys laying their shit in, because there is a match in here that I'm going to talk about, or actually two matches in here that I'm going to talk about that guys did lay their shit in I thought were really good. That being said, getting back into it, Kingston did a great job, I thought, with selling his ass off, selling his shoulders, selling his hands, selling his knee. I popped on the superplex from the ring up to the floor, even though I've seen it a bunch of times now, but still, the thud impact, it's still something that you want to hear, and it's something that you were like, damn, that had to hurt. Bryan Danielson did everything he can. Eddie fired back. False finish. And then finally, Eddie hits the back fist. He hits it. And then he hits his Kawada powerbomb for the 1-2-3. And he pins Daniel Bryan clean in the middle of the ring. And Daniel Bryan shook his hand and they embraced. And the crowd popped. I will state this. I felt that you can tell Eddie Kingston is a massive, massive, massive New Japan, All Japan Pro Wrestling fan. I mean, by his gear, you can tell who he inspired by. I will state this. I like Eddie being more. The Eddie Kingston that you saw debut on AEW Dynamite in 2020 during the pandemic, that's the Eddie Kingston I like. I like the Eddie Kingston that's a little bit more. He's not going out there trying to have a five-star match. He's going out there to whoop your ass, if that makes any sense. And I felt like Eddie went out there to deliver a great match, and they had a great match. They did a good job. But I just felt like, in my opinion, I didn't think that it was meant for that, if that makes any sense. The third match of the night, and this is the match right here. There's actually two matches on here that I'm going to not be negative about, but I'm going to critique really hard about. This is the one that I'm going to nail, and I'm not – the All-Star Scramble match, the winner receives a future AEW World Championship match, Wardlow versus Chris Jericho versus Lance Archer versus Will Hobbs versus Hook, Brian Cage, Magnus, and Dante Martin. So let's start off. Dante Martin, really good off the ropes, very athletic, but he does a lot of flippy shit that we see normally. Magnus, don't know who the hell that is. Brian Cage, good solid in-ring worker, good size, tries to be more of a cruiserweight than a big man, in my opinion, and with his size, but he is pretty athletic off the ropes. But a guy they dropped the ball with, I think. Hook has a lot of potential. I still think Lance Archer, you want to talk about missed opportunity? My God, what a missed opportunity. Powerhouse Hobbs, another guy they've dropped the ball with back and forth so many times. Chris Jericho, been around a long time, a veteran, but I'm kind of wore out on Jericho. And Wardlow, another guy that they don't know what the fuck to do with. And I will state this. The original plan was we were going to get Wardlow versus Archer versus Hobbs in a Meat Madness match or some shit like that, where the winner got an AEW World title match. And they came with the scramble match to put Jericho on pay-per-view, I guess, at this point. And I will state this. I thought this match was... You know, it's like you got one chef in the kitchen, and he's making chili, right? And he's already got the crock pot going. He's working and cooking the chili in the crock pot, okay? Then all of a sudden, somebody steps by, and he goes get his paprika out. He puts a paprika in there. Then another guy comes in, puts onion powder in. Then another guy puts beans in. Then another guy puts noodles in. Too much. After a while, there's just too much in it. And I'm one of the people that believes that I would rather seen a three-way or a four-way of four guys in there and basically put them in there and work. I thought they did the same power, boom, boom spot. Then the little guys got into their shit. Archer, I thought, looked really good in spots. I thought Hobbs did a really good job. I thought Hook I'm starting to like Hook, but I think he needs some more work. I do like Hook. I think that he needs a little bit more work. Brian Cage, I thought, like I said, he does a lot of things I like, but he's just I think he's been beat to shit at this point. But the right guy won this, and Wardlow won, and we can see from a mile away they're going to go with Wardlow because he's been teasing on TV about him winning the world title. Dante Martin, oh my God, I got to talk about this. Dante Martin flew back and forth across the ring, botched some moves, went all over the place to a point I just had enough. I had enough. I thought it was ridiculous. The right guy, Martin, was put in there to take the pinfall because Jericho ain't taking the fall on this. Hobbs, you shouldn't beat Hobbs. Archer's been beat to shit so it wouldn't hurt. Cage's been beat to shit so it wouldn't hurt. You don't want to beat Hook again. And Magnus, I mean, do you beat Magnus or do you beat Martin? Whatever. So the right guy won. I know they're pushing the Undisputed Era thing. And by the way, that faction is a waste of fucking time. That faction is horrible. You remember back when there was a reporter online that was going around that Vince wanted to bring Adam Cole to the main roster, change his name, and make him a manager for Keith Lee? And people thought it was asinine. You look at what they're doing right now. Cole's been injured. What is he doing? Doing what he's going to do. He can talk. Adam Cole is 5'6" and weighs a buck 45 probably. And I'm being dramatic when I say it, but I'm just saying he's small. His work, he does nothing impressive in the ring. His work on the mic is good. He's good on the mic. But there is nothing about Adam Cole that makes you say, box office. Well, he headlined Wembley Stadium with MJF in front of 70 or 80,000 people. Well, here's the thing. That show was already sold no matter what the main event was going to be. Uh-huh. See what I did there? It's the truth. That being said, Wardlow winning this is good. But like I said, Cole is being a manager right now. Mike Bennett and Matt Taven. Bennett and Taven are really good. They're a good talent. They're part of that group too. They're the Ring of Honor World Tag Team Champions. But what the fuck does Ring of Honor mean right now? I'm just saying, man. Like, whatever. But the right guy won that match with Wardlow. But I'm waiting for Tony Khan to fuck it up. Let's just be honest. Roger Strong versus Orange Cassidy for the International Championship. Another title belt. They got way too many fucking belts. I will state this. Roger Strong came out with the Undisputed Era. He came out with the Dr. Doom mask, it looked like. Roddy has been around a long time, over 20 years, I think, at this point. I didn't realize he was 40 the other day, but it makes sense, though. He's been around for a minute. But him and Orange Cassidy, wore out on Orange Cassidy. My God, I tweet out, I am so wore out on Orange Cassidy. My God. This match went 12 minutes and 45 seconds. It didn't drag. Orange Cassidy's been selling. There were some spots where Orange Cassidy was getting his back and his ribs worked on. Roger Strong hit his finish, got the 1-2-3. I don't really remember much about because I'm just, and it's nothing against Orange Cassidy. I don't like his gimmick. Anybody knows me. I don't like ha-ha bullshit wrestling. But Orange Cassidy has been treated so seriously the last 18 months or 2 years or whatever. I'm just like, ugh, I'm bored. I'm burned out on it, man. Like, get something new. And Roddy beat him clean in the middle of the ring with a 1-2 with his finish. And then the post-match, Cassidy rolls out of the ring, and then the Undisputed Era is in there celebrating. And then all of a sudden, Kyle O'Reilly comes to the crown, debuts, and returns. And O'Reilly's sitting there. He looks a little ragged and wore out. And he walks in, and he gives. They think he's going to stand off of Roddy, like, what's going to happen? History there, and he hugs Roger Strong. Matt Taven takes his shirt off and says, here, take the shirt. It's yours. You want to join? And Riley walks up and whispers something in Roger Strong's ear. He turns away. He doesn't accept the offer and walks away. And everybody's like, come back. And Roddy is like, okay, like, whatever. So there's been rumors that Kyle O'Reilly won't be able to work again because his neck is so bad. And it is what it is. Tag team match. We have a tag team match. And this does not have a belt. This match does not have a title on the line here. The Blackpool Combat Club. John Plummer Moxley is Cornette. Jordan Cornette calls him. Claudio Castagnoli, basic Claudio, plain Castagnoli. Well, goes up against my favorite tag team in the business, FTR, Dax Harwood, and Cash Wheeler. And I thought to myself, I said, okay, This is going to be a match where I'm either going to say FTR pulled out a fucking a classic or a stellar tag team match with the Blackpool Combat Club, or they basically said Jon Moxley did what he normally does, Claudio did some things, and the match was basic. And I will make this clear, FTR, and I'm going to let it be clear, neither one was right. Jon Moxley and Claudio Castagnoli held their own in this, and FTR did the thing, and it was a great match. Maybe the best match of the night, to be honest with you. You can argue one or two. And I will state this, I thought this match was great. Dax got some juice, got some color, got some blood in it. I thought that was great. Despite pile driver spot, Moxley kicked out of it. Moxley does not take pinfalls that much often, to be honest with you. I thought Moxley did a great job with working. See, when Moxley is not overdoing it with the rapping punches, and he's just working and he's raking your back and being nasty, I think it's great. Jon Moxley has a legit background in Greco-Roman wrestling or whatever it is, or jiu-jitsu. Why does he not do that more often? I'll never know. I like to see it. Claudio Castagnoli. Claudio did a lot of things good. There's one thing about Claudio I realized. He can't talk worth a shit, but he can work, and he's got good size, even though he's very lean. But FTR and him, I thought FTR did a good job. I thought Cashmere did a great job. Lots of false finishes. They hit their finish. FTR hit their finisher on him. They kicked out of that. Spike Podrick kicked out of that. Moxley and Claudio hit their finishers, basically. They both kicked out of every one of them. Thought it was great. And, of course, Moxley gets a chokehold on Dax. Cash is trying to get to the Claudio. Claudio catches him, and fucking Dax taps out. Match went 21 minutes, 50 seconds. The crowd was – it felt like an old school. It had the makings of an NWA early 90s WWF tag team match where you believed you saw four guys go in there in a sporting event and had a great match, and they told a great story. And I thought they did a great job. I actually – I got saved on my cable provider here. I actually went back and watched it the other day, and – I just thought they did a great job, man. I thought the match was really good. The story-wise, they did a great storytelling, whatever, and I thought it was great. The sixth match of the night. Timeless Toni Storm with Mariah May and Luther versus Deonna Purrazzo for the AEW Women's World Championship. I was kind of hoping I would be very ecstatic about this because Deonna Purrazzo is damn good in the ring, and Tony's great too. But I was really excited. Deonna Purrazzo comes out, gets a nice ovation. Toni Storm's old school theme comes out. Her old theme comes out, and Mariah May's dressed up as her, and then Timeless Toni Storm comes out. And they did a good job with this, what they did. Now, and the only reason why I say one of the matches was going to knock is I thought this match would be better with this, but looking back at it, I get what they were doing. Deonna and Toni Storm had a great technical wrestling match where they told a good story. They wrist locks, arm drags, near falls, counter wrestling, Greco-Roman style wrestling that I thought was really good. Deonna made some comebacks, some good waves, hit a dive, I think. There was one dive in the match I thought was really good. Toni did a good job selling her ass off. And then the finish was simple. Mariah May caused a distraction, took a wicked boot from Deonna Purrazzo and took a bump to the floor. It was really nasty. And Timeless Toni Storm took advantage of it, hit her quick pile driver and pinned Deonna 1-2-3 in the middle of the ring. 12 minutes, 15 seconds, it didn't drag. I thought it was really good. We all know what's coming. We all know who's coming. Mercedes Moné is going to show up in AEW. She's going to show up. We all know what's happening. She's going to show up, and I think that's going to be a big deal, obviously, for Toni, because now she's going to show up. You got the Mariah May thing going on with Toni Storm. We know what that means. Mariah May, she is very talented in the ring. I've seen some of her stuff in Stardom. She works her ass off. So I'm interested to see what they're going to do. That being said, don't hurt Deonna to lose this match, but at the same time, I get what they're doing. The AEW is trying to get their women's division back on notice because WWE's women's division, my God, you want to talk about a powerhouse. It's ridiculous right now. The seventh match of the night, and many people say the match of the night, and I agree with this wholeheartedly. Will Ospreay. Takashi. I can't say his name right, but you know what it is. Takashi. And I expected physical, high spot. And I told myself, I'm turning off psychology right now. I'm turning off everything. I just want to watch these two guys beat the shit out of each other. And I will let you know this right here, right now. What a fucking clinic. These two guys tore the fucking house down, man. Tore the fucking house down, and I'm very proud of it. Very proud of it. Ospreay is a good talent in the ring. Not the best promo in the world, but he's very talented in the ring. Has good size too. Takeshi, I can't say his name right. Damn it. He's really grown on me. Good size. And those forearms, those whatever. But I will say this. Physical as fuck. A lot of false finishes. Crowd was into it. Working their asses off. Takeshi took a forearm shot where he sold with his hands. Trying to figure out where he was at. He was out. He didn't know where he was at. Don Callis, who has been very controversial over the last 4 or 5 years, was on commentary. He was great on commentary with this. They did a great job, told a great story. Both guys back and forth, hit their finishes. They protected each other's finishes, I thought, in a lot of ways. And Ospreay hit that running blade elbow he throws and got the 1-2-3. But I will say this, the move that popped me was Takeshi countered one of his moves,
It was the move that Hangman uses where he drops him, he hooks him upside down, he drops him on his knee like a reverse tombstone, and then he deadlifts him into the suplex and got a near fall. I thought I popped on that. The counter, the blue thunderbomb was badass.
And I thought Takeshi took a hell of a blade. It took a hell of a finish. It was a 1-2-3. They went 22 minutes, and they did a great job. I thought they did a great job. The spot that made me cringe, though, was a suplex spot that where Ospreay burned his back on the top rope. That causes issues, and I thought that could have been bad. That could have been really bad, but I did like it. I thought it was really good to the point where I was like, man, these guys are working their asses off. You can't even knock it. Even if you don't agree psychology-wise, it was all over the place. You got to admit, it was a damn – they tore the house down. I'm sure Dave Meltzer sat there had a – I'm sure Meltzer sat there had a bottle of lotion and a Kleenex and called it a day, but, you know, just saying. I mean, Will Ospreay's got more 5-star matches than Kurt Angle and AJ Styles. And Shawn Michaels. But that's besides the point. Overall, great work from both guys. The seventh match of the night, the three-way match for the AEW World Championship, World Heavyweight Championship, Samoa Joe versus Hangman Page and Swerve Strickland. Swerve comes out, he's over. Hangman gets booted out of the building. Samoa Joe comes out like a badass. And this match was physical, too. To the point where I was all in. I knew Swerve was not going to win this, but I was rooting my ass off of Swerve. Swerve tore the house down. Hangman and Page has been obsessed with not just winning the title, but more so that Swerve not getting it. And you can see that they're going to turn Swerve babyface. You can see it's coming. It's coming, guys. I can see it coming in the long run. Great spot finishes. Swerve and Joe. Joe is a badass. Sold his ass off. Hangman worked his ass off in the ring too. Swerve did his thing. Not too much crazy shit. Great working on both sides. I thought it was great. Camera work did get a little loose. Joe took a big bump to the floor where he went over the outside and landed face first on the mat. He smacked his hands, sold his face. Did a false finish where the ref got knocked out. Hangman knocking referees out. Hit two big butt shock lariats on Samoa Joe. Joe kicks out where the referee runs in. Swerve hits his finish on Joe, but he takes Hangman out, and Hangman ends up kicking out. And then, of course, we get to the finish where Joe has got the Kogita clutch on Hangman. Swerve is getting back in the ring, and Hangman taps out, and they leave it on commentary. Well, did Hangman tap out because of the submission, or did he tap out because Swerve was going to stop Swerve from winning the world title? But Joe wins it, and the right guy wins it. So we are obviously getting Samoa Joe versus Wardlow. That's going to come for the world title. Now, time for the main event. And that being said, I do like the fact we did see something with Swerve where Prince Nana threw his crown or his headband to Swerve, and Swerve threw it back and says, I got this, not like this. And the crowd popped. The crowd wants to cheer Swerve Strickland. It's time. And I'm one of them that believes you need to turn him babyface. It's time. AEW World Tag Team Championship Tornado Tag Match, the main event, Sting's retirement match, the Young Bucks, Matthew Jackson, Nicholas Jackson, a.k.a. the EVPs, go up against Darby Allin with Ric Flair, Garrett Borden, and Steve Borden Jr., Sting's kids, and Sting. I got a tear to my eye when I saw the package before Sting walked out to the ring, watching those highlight clips of his career in the theater. And I got goosebumps watching it, and I hear Sting go, it's showtime. Let's do this. Crowd pop. And Sting's music hits, and of course,
out comes, and I will say this, the Young Bucks I've been critical of. I did like their new music, and I did like their entrance. I thought their entrance was good. I liked their gear they were wearing. Darby Allin comes out to his song, crowd pops. And, of course, Sting does his thing, comes out with his sons come out. One of his sons comes out, has got his hair in a blonde thing for Sting in his Great American Bash 1990 gear. The other one comes out with the wig on. And he's got the Wolfpack Sting. And then we hear Seek and Destroy by Metallica. Sting walks out. They start the match early. Darby makes a big dive. Sting's kids come in, give him Stinger splashes. They do a lot of great spots. Table spot. But this is where I'm going to say, I enjoyed this match. And I thought it was a great send-off for Sting. Ricky Steamboat got involved. Flair got involved. I thought it was great. The only thing that I'm going to say, Darby Allin, what the fuck? Let me tell you what happened. They brought glass involved in this with tables. Everything. All the shit. Tears. Everything. Darby Allin climbs up on a 12 to 15 foot ladder in the ring and decides to do a front flip or a swanton off the fucking ladder. And he's going to lay one of the Young Bucks out who is laying on a thing of chairs and a big piece of glass. And the Young Bucks move and Darby takes that fucking bump. And Darby Allin is literally bleeding from every portion of his back to the point where I was actually concerned that Darby Allin was going to bleed out on live pay-per-view. I did not like it. I thought it was stupid. Sting took a hell of a bump through a table that I thought was fucking gruesome, and I thought it was good enough. Sting actually got his ass beaten this. The Young Bucks beat the shit out of Sting. Sting fired back a couple times. Sting went through a table, got up, fired up. The Bucks cut him off again. They threw him through a plate of plexiglass, through a thing of glass. Sting got up out of that. Flair got involved, got super kicked. Steamboat got involved, got super kicked. I mean, everything was going to the point. I was like, wow, this is really getting into it. Darby comes in, makes a save. Sting fires up, drops one of the Bucks. Darby comes back in. You can see his cuts are glued up. He does his coffin drop on one of the Bucks on Matt. And Sting rolls him over to Scorpion Deathlock, and Matt taps out. Sting wins, and they send off Sting with a win for the Tornado Tag, Matt. The Tornado Tag for the AEW World title. And it was announced after the show that they're going to vacate the World Tag Team titles again, once again. So, I will state this. Outside of the gruesome bullshit for just for the sake of blood, I enjoyed the match. I thought they did a great job, and I thought it was a hell of a send-off for Sting. And I think everybody in that arena wanted to see Sting go out on top. I really do. But that being said, I will state this. On a scale of 1 to 10, I will say this. I think it was a 9.5 out of 10. I thought the show was really damn good. I did also think that they did jump the gun on some things to the point where it was not needed. But I will state this for the record. That is the best show Tony Khan has ever done. That's the best AEW pay-per-view I've watched since All Out 2021, Double or Nothing 2021. That's how good that show was, in my opinion. I thought it was the best one they've done, and I'm looking forward to see what they're doing. They got AEW Dynasty, which is going to happen in St. Louis. Me and my homie Trip, we're talking about going to that, by the way. We'll see what happens after that. But that being said, guys, what a pay-per-view, and I'm very happy with it. So now we're going to talk about Sting, and for the next 10 to 20 minutes, I'm not going to take much more of your time, but I will state this for the record. I grew up a hardcore pro wrestling fan, still am to this day. Tell you my relationship with wrestling. Growing up, my dad worked a lot, and my dad worked a lot to support me and my brothers and sisters. And we struggled a lot, but at the same time, there's three things I can count on in my life with my dad. Louisville Cardinal basketball, Monday Night Nitro, and Monday Night Raw. Those were three things that I could count on growing up. And that meant to me more than ever. So I felt really good knowing that I was going to watch Sting perform live for the last time. Not live, but watch him on TV. If The Undertaker was never a wrestler, Sting would be my all-time favorite. Sting has been a guy that I've always, no matter what, man, I was so happy when Sting started working with TNA Wrestling. I thought it was great that he was coming back.
And you can best believe in the fall of 2014, when Sting debuted a Survivor Series, I was ecstatic to see Sting on WWE television. Now, we all know how that run went, and it is what it is. But the fact that I got to see Sting live show up meant something to me as a person. I was like, wow, that's amazing. Sting, on the other hand, the one thing I always hear about Sting is he never had that run that we all wanted. Here's what that means, the run. Obviously, people wanted to see him in WWE earlier than when he came in. People wanted to see him and The Undertaker, and I'm one of the people that wanted to see too. And we were close many times to getting that too. We were very close. That being said, the fact that Sting, think about this, he had a 39-40 year career. He wrestled in WWE, what, maybe 6-7 months, if that? And he is known more for having a run with WCW, being the guy of that company for all those years, and having to run in TNA and having his last run in AEW. And he didn't have to have a... If the run in WWE never happened, it would be a black mark on Sting's legacy, probably, but it's not that big of a deal because look at the run he's had. That's impressive. That's impressive from the standpoint of, wow, Sting had that run and he didn't work in WWE that long or have that long of a tenure. That to me is more amazing than the fact that he was able to have the run he had. That shows the legacy of what he had. Now, I'm one of those guys that has always been that Sting is a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's had great matches. He's had a great run. He's always... Dave Meltzer, a guy that is the wrestling journalist guy that people love, and I'm so annoyed with Meltzer. Meltzer has his own Hall of Fame, the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame, that I used to vote for, and I quit voting years ago, was he doesn't have Sting in his Hall of Fame. He didn't think Sting was a big enough draw to be in the Wrestling Hall of Fame. Well, Sting didn't really draw any money. Well, 16,000 people in a sold-out, almost 17,000 people in a sold-out arena in Greensboro, the Coliseum, and he was the main attraction of a show. But he didn't draw. He didn't draw any money. Starrcade 1997, the year built up with him and Hogan. They didn't draw. That didn't draw any money. Super Brawl, what was it, Super Brawl 7 or 8, 1990, the rematch with him and Hogan, the Cow Palace, set a gate record for the Cow Palace, a pay-per-view record as well. That didn't draw any money. His first pay-per-view match in almost 4 or 5 years on TNA when he teamed up with Christian Cage to take on Monty Brown and Jeff Jarrett on pay-per-view. For that time being, was a record-setting draw of buy rates in the history of TNA wrestling until Samoa Joe and Kurt Angle broke it with their lockdown cage match in 2008. We talk about merchandise sales. We want to talk about all these great things that Sting has done. The fact that Sting literally shut down Pro Wrestling Tees website and AEW's website for merch when he debuted in December 2020, when he debuted on that television program on Dynamite in Daly's Place. When he debuted, it shut the site down. It wasn't CM Punk did it first. It was Sting. And it actually took Sting less time to do it. But he never drew or nobody really cared or he wasn't a draw. Give me a fucking break. Seriously. Sting is one of the greatest of all time. I mean, and I saw this post the other day, and I made a TikTok of it. It was a post of four wrestlers. Undertaker, Kane, Bray Wyatt, and Sting. Those four guys. And they put this out there, and it really hit me home. It hit me right in the chest. It was like, damn. Undertaker is retired. Kane is busy with politics, so he's retired. Bray Wyatt unfortunately passed away, and Sting's not retired. The four dark characters, scary characters of the last 30 years are no longer around. Think about that. That's crazy. Now, some people argue, is Sting really a dark character? I will say, is he really a dark character? Is he really something? Well, I will state this. Surfer Sting had a hell of a run. but times was changing with wrestling. And thank God and God bless Scott Hall's soul, Scott Hall, yes, the Scott Hall, that came up with the idea, hey, paint your face white. Keep growing your hair out. Get a trench coat. Watch the movie The Crow, which is my favorite movie of all time, by the way. And see what you can do with that. And Sting did that and became a dark character. He was quiet. He became mute. He didn't say anything because WCW was taken over by, it was a hostile takeover, and they didn't believe what he was doing, and they lost faith, and he was the one. I remember when I was at, I remember going to a Nitro when I was about 4 or 5 years old, and Sting actually propelled out of the rafters. And to this day, it's one of the top 3 to 5 biggest experiences I've ever had at a wrestling show. I got goosebumps right now talking about it. I got chills. Watching that man drop from that ceiling in Market Square Arena in Indianapolis, Indiana, drop. When he dropped, and I saw that man, and to see the crowd reaction, and when he got in the ring and he started cleaning house, you don't realize the moments like that, whatever. I mean, Sting had great moments. I mean, the Clash of Champions, the first one, March 1988, the Greensboro Coliseum. Him and Ric Flair, 45 minutes, made Sting. Great American Bash 1990, winning his first world title from Ric Flair. Is Flair Sting's greatest rival? Absolutely. But is he Flair's greatest rival? No, Dusty Rhodes is. Rhodes is the greatest rival for Flair. But Sting's legacy with Flair is on top notch. I mean, his wars with Vader in the early 90s in WCW, the strap match from Super Bowl III, the White Castle of Fear strap match they had. Go back and watch that. You want to talk about brutal. I mean, my God, it was nasty. Beach Blast 1992 with him and Cactus Jack, Falls Count Anywhere, brutal. I mean, his matches with Hogan were great. I mean, the two matches, even though Starrcade 97 had his fluky-ass finishes, but the build-up was big for that. His wars with, his matches with Flair are top-notch. There's a match from Slammarine 1996 with him and, or was it the Great American Bash 96? Great American Bash 96, where him and William Regal go for 25 minutes, tear the house down. His matches with the Road Warriors are great. His matches with Lex Luger are really good to watch. His matches with Rick Rude in the 90s are great. Sting has had a body of work that will last the time of time. And I just named a bunch of shit that he did not do in WWE. And that right there. I mean, I can't sit there and knock Sting and say that whatever career he had. When you talk Hall of Fame on guys, I don't think there's first ballot, second ballot. I think you're in the Hall of Fame or you're not in the Hall of Fame. I don't believe in, you should go first ballot Hall of Famer. A Hall of Famer is a Hall of Famer. Well, there's criteria. No, there's not. I don't believe in that shit. I just don't. Do I think some guys should get in before somebody else? Absolutely. If you ask me right here, right now, who should get in, Undertaker or Sting first? Taker, obviously, because the run he had. But Sting, on the other hand, you can sit there and say, if Taker's not there, Sting needs to get in too. You know, I mean, what? Vice versa. That's what I mean. So that's what I'm at with Sting. Now, do I think Sting's ever going to wrestle again? No. I think he's done. He's 64 years of age. He's had a hell of a run. And you really think about it, his AEW run, there's not one bad match he had. He had all tag matches. But he didn't have anything where it's like, God, Sting, just retire. I never heard anybody say that. Sting literally had every match they had was fantastic, in my opinion. But that being said, I think the best way I can say to Sting is thank you for everything. Thank you for making me a fan. Thank you for 2 hours of my week. I could turn off any problems I had at home and have any issues in my life. I can turn on my TV for 2 hours and see you on television. And the fact that, and another thing that I love about Sting is that he's tied to my favorite film of all time, The Crow. And anybody knows me knows how emotionally I am invested in that movie. Sting is one of those guys where I am just, it's just, two biggest wrestlers, there's three wrestlers in my lifetime that had more impact on me than any wrestlers or athletes or whatever. Taker, obviously, Sting, and Kevin Nash. Those three guys had a massive impact on me. Taker is my hero.
Sting, I mean, my God. I mean, like I said, and Kevin Nash was cool as fuck. I wanted to be Kevin Nash, man. Who didn't want to be? Who would not want to be Kevin Nash? Late 90s Kevin Nash, Wolfpack Kevin Nash. Oh, my God. Who, Big Sexy, please. Anybody, Big Daddy Cool, whatever you want to call him. Ah, please, I would sign me up.
Absolutely. But I'm getting off a tangent, and I'm going to end the show on this. Thank you, Sting, for the memories. Thank you for all your sacrifice. Thank you for everything you've done. And to me, you are one of the greatest of all time, and it's not even close. So that being said, I conclude this episode this week, Conversation with Shelby Green. Tune in next week. We'll get back to basics. We're going to talk a little WrestleMania 40, Louisville basketball as well. I'm going to get back in that. Obviously, we all know that. And we'll see what else happens next week. But until then, I don't bullshit. I just tell it like it is. Straight up. Have a good one, y'all.